Hello and welcome, ladies and gentlemen, to Combox Live, where the game lives on, it never dies. I'm Behram Kazi, who you can find at Def Mango on Twitter. And with me is Jared Kimber, as always, who you can find literally everywhere. And we are here to review day 6 of the T20 World Cup in its entirety. I suppose the Italy-Namibia game was the best one. Other than that, we're probably looking at another turd sandwich, are we, Jared?
Italy-Nepal.
Yeah, man, I've been mixing up my countries these days.
All right, there's too many countries to start with then. I've always said that. Yeah. I'm not even sure that was a good game, was it? I mean, it was a good game, I suppose, from a perspective that Italy won a World Cup game and it was lovely. And apparently two brothers from Sydney are better at batting than the entire country of Nepal. But yep. Realistically, it wasn't a good contest. It wasn't enjoyable. So I'm saying they were all pretty ordinary.
Yeah, I suppose so. Let's start with the Italy-Nepal game because, of course, you know, we want to save the India game for middle or end.
No. Start with India. Just start with
India.
Okay, let's
start with India.
And it's the one I remember, so.
Okay. Well, India defeated Namibia by a whopping 93 runs in Delhi. And they bowled Namibia out for 116 runs in 18.2 overs. It was convincing if you look at the scorecard, although India did weirdly stutter.
Yes. Someone sent me a message, actually, asking if they have the worst numbers, 9, 10, 11, in the competition, which is, I'd have to go through. There is a lot of teams in this competition. But I suppose if you're going to go that hard and you have a tail the way that they have, there's always a possibility of that happening. I think I described it in the piece as a mere 200, right? Like, Deepak is moaning on the group and everyone else is like, you know, I mean... What did they make? 210, was it?
209 for 9. That's 209,
yeah. I mean, they were projected to make 230 on the betting markets. So they were a long way short of that. And there were various times where it felt like they could have done that. And there are other times where it felt like they got stuck. So they haven't, you know, I wrote about this a little bit in the piece of, I think there is an element at the moment of we are judging them against how well they've done in bilaterals and warm-up games. It is worth remembering that generally in World Cups, scoring rates are a lot lower and go in that direction.
I mean, we did an entire footmarks on that. But yeah. So for those of you who missed the game, Namibia won the toss. Erasmus opted to field first. And then India were ballistic in the power play. They were 86 for 1 at the end of the power play. And at the end of 7 overs, they were 104 for 1. And they managed 209 for 9. So in the remaining 13 overs after the first 7, they scored, 105 for 8. And, you know, if you just look at the scorecard, you will think that this was a complete victory for India. But it was weird, man. I mean, you know, Tilak Verma looked quite unconvincing to me. He got dropped on 19 by Steenkamp, who can't seem to take any catches, right? He drops one per game these days. And sure, Ishan Kishan and Hardik Pandya were brilliant. And give some marks to Sanju as well. 22 of 8 was fantastic. But India, at least you expect them to capitalize further on that sort of start. And I was thinking 250. We ended up with 209.
Yeah, no, exactly. I think, especially after the power play. And to be fair to Namibia, like, their spinners aren't exactly frontline spinners either. You know, Erasmus is a wily part-timer. And Bernard Schultz is... he's a handy bowler. Like, there's nothing wrong with him. But these are not, like, you know, there are some associate teams with much better spinning attacks. And India did seem to sort of go very up and down against them. It might be, I mean, Erasmus had a bizarre game, right? He also came in.
I mean, I'm a fan, dude.
Oh, look, he's a clever cricketer. I love the guy already. He's a clever cricketer and he's been around for a long time and he does whatever he has to do to make it work. He's not the most talented player in the world, but he can do a few things very, very well. But realistically, I don't think he should end up with 4 for 20. And I know some of those were tail end wickets, but they weren't really scoring off him and he was bowling at the death, right?
Yeah, I mean, he gave us his impersonation of Kedar Jadhav and he Jadhaved India. That's what I've been saying. Ends up with figures, otherworldly figures of 4 for 20 in a game where his team conceded 209 runs. And if his figures are 420, I'm sure there's someone somewhere around the world who's lighting up a spliff in honor of that performance.
Well, I mean, the other interesting thing is that you say he's like Kedar Jadhav. It's a combination of like Kedar Jadhav and Mark Watt. Right, because he also goes all the way back on the crease. In fact, there was one delivery today that apparently was called a dead ball, and we all thought it was because he was in the. Oh, there we go. Yeah, and it was about Tariq. Yeah, we could throw him in as well. Yeah. there was one delivery today that was called a dead ball, and apparently it was because Rod Tucker thought the batter wasn't ready rather than what we originally thought, which was he was in the wrong area when he delivered it. I think Rod Tucker wasn't ready rather than the batter not being ready, by the way. But anyway, that's what he does. He tries all of his tricks and everything. It's just a little bit interesting that it worked, right? And then they did manage to slow it down. I think when their seamers were bowling early on, it was, you know, I mean, Trumpleman bowled okay. You know, he swung the ball a little bit. But the other three seamers they had, three seamers that they would have had after then, just like were either too slow or too skiddy. You know, Shikongo, I think, has a little bit of talent. But the minute he came on this pitch, I think I said in the group, well, this is going for a lot of runs this over. And it went for a dot ball and a single. And it still went for about 20 runs. You know, Max Heingo again, just, you know, not up to it. And, you know, JJ Schmidt as well. Like, you know, I don't know what someone like JJ Schmidt can do against a batting lineup like this. But it was the spin that really caused the bigger issues, I thought. So we've seen in two games from India, spin and slower balls, I suppose, causing the issues so far.
100%. And I mean, this deck at the Kotla, and I'm not going to call it anything else, I'll always call it the Kotla. It was interesting because it seemed to be quite a flat deck when the seamers were bowling, but there was quite a bit of help for these spinners. There was some skid off the surface, which is why the sidearm slingy action of Erasmus, on occasion, he doesn't always bowl that way. That's what I find really fascinating. That was causing India a lot of trouble and the ball was keeping low. So I think, you know, it's kind of good that India are getting tested in these conditions, even if they're against associates, right? Because they've been playing on flat decks in preparation for this T20 World Cup. And we know from history that you don't always get those sort of flat decks in ICC tournaments, man.
No, exactly. And we saw exactly the same thing play out when Namibia batted, right? They attacked the seam bowlers as well. I know Sonny Gavaskar was very upset that Jasper Bumrah didn't take the new ball. I was quite happy he didn't take the new ball. So I'm not really sure where we can meet in the middle on that one. But you could tell that the new ball was coming on fine, right? And then once the spinners came on, it was kind of game over. And Namibia did well to last as long as they did, perhaps, in the end. So it was a surface where I think when Trumpleman was bowling that first over, it was swinging a bit. And then when Shikongo started bowling the second one, even though he was getting swing, I was just like, this is just exactly his speed of seamer you just want to face. And it was probably the same later on with some of the Indian seamers as well. So it was a little bit like that. They went very hard in the power play. Maybe the ball getting soft played a little part of it. But look, Erasmus is clever. I've seen him do this in associate games before and get tanked. Yeah, absolutely tonked out. You know, this isn't the first time I've seen Erasmus trial these tricks and get smashed. So there had to be something in the surface that also helped him a little bit.
Absolutely. And I mean, I feel like India has most covers, most bases covered, not most covers based.
Covered bases
but,
as well.
Yeah. But there is one weak link in the bowling that we've talked about a lot, both on our WhatsApp group. We've recorded videos and written pieces on it. And that is India's power play bowling. Namibia were 57 for one after their power play. They won the game morally. The moral victory belongs to Namibia, right? And India's power play bowling has fumbled on occasion. It's been a frequent sort of occurrence as well. Today, when Namibia were taking them apart, I knew that the minute Varun comes on, this game is over. And that's exactly what happens, right? He cleans up steam camp first ball. He picks up two wickets in his second over, strikes twice, and ends up with 3 for 7 in two overs. Isn't even bowled again. But when you play better opposition teams, and if you muck up that power play phase when you're bowling, that could be an area where, you know, they could potentially lose a game because they're still going to win games. It's not an issue as such because they've got Bumrah and Varun, right?
Yeah, no. I mean, you know, you're right. Also, you don't want to give teams a head start. The interesting thing about today is, did you look at the figures and who actually went for runs and who didn't?
Akshar Patel went
for
runs.
In the new ball bowlers.
Oh, well, Ashdeep had a nightmare, right?
Yeah.
He was terrible.
He bowled 3 overs for 36, but the two all-rounders, I mean, Hardik Pandya is an all-rounder, Shubman Dubey is whatever he is, but the two non-specialist bowlers, Hardik Pandya ends up going at 5 runs and over, and so I don't know if he pulls it back after a bad start, but and Shubman Dubey, I remember he bowled at least 1 over in the power play and went for like, 6 or 7 off the top of my head, right?
So yeah, dude. So when that happened, we were all shocked because Rob was already pissed that India aren't taking this seriously enough and they're mucking about. And then Shivam Dubey bowls the 5th over, bowls a power play over, goes for just 6 runs. Weirdly enough, even after bowling like a billion no balls, he's ended up with 1 for 11 in 2.2 overs. You cannot explain it.
Yeah, so I'm just having a look at this now. So Hardik's first over goes for 2 and his next one goes for 13. So still 7.5, yep, all things considered, right? Like, you're fine with that. Ashdeep took the wicket after bowling, after going for a couple of boundaries there early on, and then he bowled the sixth over, which was, again, a couple more boundaries and then a 6 to finish off. So a lot of those runs are from Ashdeep, right? Like, what did you say? They were 51?
57 for 1.
57 for 1. So 36 of those came off their main new ball bowler, right? Which is weird. True. Again, might have something to do with the wicket. Fascinating that Shivam Dubey and Hardik found it easier to bowl or whatever. But it's still the same thing of, at the moment, they do seem to be in a bit of a situation where I think they realize that Bumrah is not at his absolute best when you give him the new ball and you want to keep him back a little bit. But Ashdeep has to work for that, right? And in this particular game, Ashdeep didn't work and the other guys did. So I don't know what to make of that. That could just be dumb luck. It could just be the kind of bowler he was or whatever. You know, there was one edge over the top of slips. But there was a couple of times where I did think they weren't that worried about facing Ashdeep, right? And that is a bit of a concern.
And he has been going for plenty in the power play these days, even though that was supposed to be his USP. But I mean, it's still early days in the T20 World Cup and there's time for him to figure things out. I think that obviously Hardik Pandya, I'd be surprised if he's not player of the match over here. 52 of 28. He absolutely destroyed your man Shikongo, who I think is a doppelganger of Iman Shumpert. They've got the same hairstyle, right?
But that's, and I mean, other than that, they have nothing in common.
two for 21 with the ball are slightly deceiving figures for Hardik, even though I think that's still a solid effort. But he's none for 15 in 2 power play overs, right? And he takes those 2 wickets when the game's gone. But still, I mean, he batted splendidly, and 52 of 28 is a great effort. Not my best batter of the day, though. Ishan Kishan is one of the cleanest strikers off the ball going around these days. And it's incredible how he wasn't even part of India's plans. And then last minute, they chuck Gill out, bring him in as the backup keeper, then he smashes New Zealand to bits, and now he's a part of the playing 11 or starting 11. Well, 20 ball 50, which is the second fastest in this T20 World Cup, and ends up with 61 of 24. That over that he faced Smith, right? 4 sixes on the bounce, and then that's followed up by a boundary of 4 as well. So, I mean, I love watching the guy bat, the way he charges both spinners and paces. Honestly, I even see a world where Tilak might get dropped now, right? He could slot in as the number 3 because Tilak was quite poor today. Even after getting dropped on 19, he scored 25 of 21. So, I mean, India are really so fortunate that they've got this wealth of, you know, resources and riches. And Ishan Kishan is enjoying a really, really good arc. These are the sort of arcs I love.
It's funny. So I've always been lower on Ishan Kishan than everyone else. Not because he doesn't have the potential, but just because he hadn't seemed to found a way to have brought it together. But last year when he went in the IPL auction, I actually thought that was quite a good buy because he's getting closer to that maturity, you know, part of his life. And you look at it now and it's like, maybe that's all we're seeing now. We're just seeing it. He's become a bit more of a professional. I think we've heard stories of him not always being the greatest, you know, professional behind the scenes. He seems to be like that at the moment. It could also just be an incredible purple patch, right? And everything's worked.
Yeah.
There's so many players available that you know, maybe India could be in a situation where they just keep picking people who are in form and they're always going to find someone who's going to make runs. So I don't know. But yeah, he's hitting the ball beautifully. It looked like, I don't know what the, I don't know how many people in Namibia are watching the cricket, but at that stage, surely if you're in Namibia, you're just like, I don't want to continue to watch this.
Yeah. I mean, that was scintillating stuff by Ishan Kishan. And if India has managed 209 for 9 in 20 overs, well, Ishan Kishan scores 61 of 24. So that's 61 in 4 overs, right?
Yeah. Like,
and you throw Hardik in there and Sanju, who scores 22 of 8. I think Rob Barron had the stat over that everyone else ends up scoring like 64 runs or something. So, yeah, I mean, you don't need everyone to perform in games of T20 cricket.
No.
Despite stuttering, India have played a really good game. And you know what one big positive is? You know, they keep bringing in people into their team and they continue to perform. Like, Sanju comes in under pressure, 22 of 8, which is good. I think that's way above par, plus knock. And Bumrah, we expected him to come back, and 1 for 20 for him in 4 overs. So most things are going India's way, although stiffer competition awaits them.
Cornet said, this was a slow and low pitch. 210 was above par. I don't think this was a patchy performance. I mean, they ended up with their tail out there, Cornet. So it's a patchy performance because that's not part of their plan. Also, if you're talking about India, we're talking about India as a team as par.
Yeah.
They obviously should have scored more than this, right? Like, as in, they were well in control of the game at certain times to be able to score more than this. So I do think it was a bit up and down. Like, a lot of the runs come in that early batch, and then afterwards they don't. So I think it's a bit silly to say that this is this was just based on the pitch. I do think that it was a lot easier to score against the seamers with a brand new ball than it was at any other time. But the fact that they ended up with their tail out in the middle is automatically not, that's not how this team is set up to play, right? So some things went wrong for them. I think it'd be silly to say that this was like 40 above par score, because I don't think that was the case for this Indian side at all. I once made a pair in a club game, which is almost impossible to do. But I have been obsessed with batting my entire life. And so I put that into my new book, The Art of Batting. Being that I'm not very good at that skill, I decided to talk to other people who were. So I hit up as many contacts as I could just to talk about batting. Rahul Dravid, Brian Lara, AB de Villiers, Kumar Sangakkara, Ross Taylor, Susie Bates, Nasser Hussain, Ian Chappell, and so many, many, many more. I wanted batters to talk about how they and their friends made runs, because that is the art of batting.
Yeah, and also one thing I've been noticing in India since the start of the Asia Cup is that they are generally a poor catching team. But this T20 World Cup, they've been spectacular. It's only that one Siraj drop in the previous game, and that Bumrah catch was spectacular today. So they've taken, like, you know, more than 90% of their catches, which is also a big positive. And yeah, I don't think there's much else to talk about them. So let's just jump into the India Super Chats right now before we take a break.
Okay. Is that?
Yep. Yep. All right, Erasmus was like that uncle in gully cricket who randomly bowls slow, loopy balls, which get me bowled. Good to know, works at World Cup level 2, says Prudvi. That's funny.
Yeah, well, I mean, as we said, Mark Watt is another version of the... I know he bowls differently, but, you know, Akeshev, Yadav, who was the other player we said before?
Usman Tariq.
Usman Tariq. Majid Haq for Scotland back in the old days. Like, you know, these little things have always existed, right? But bowlers are now sort of weaponizing them a little bit more in T20 cricket.
Yeah, absolutely. But where would you place Erasmus today in the leaderboard? I think Varun's still the best spinner for his 3-for-7 in 2 overs. You'd place him a bit ahead of Akshar. Akshar has a really bad first over. Then he picks up 2 wickets to end with 2-for-20 in 3 overs. So Erasmus is the second best spinner of this game.
I actually thought Schultz bowled really well for a little while there, by the way. Mm. And then they just got on top of him. And I kept expecting it to happen with Erasmus, but they didn't. So well done to him. Because he's not really a proper spinner. Like, I don't mean that in a way of he can't bowl. But, you know, having, as I said, having watched him for a long time, a lot of times he just gets absolutely mullered because he doesn't do as much with the ball. But he is a very, very clever cricketer and will find a way.
He's got a good sense of humor as well. Mahesh over here asks, could Rinku Singh have been sent at 5 today? I think Dubey went to came out to bat at the right time and the batting order was fine. But there was one moment towards the death overs when 3 overs were remaining where I was thinking, all right, do you retire out Dubey at this point because spin overs are done and send Rinku in? And I would like to see a little bit more of that, right? Like,
you probably don't want to do that in a game like this anyway, because you want extra balls under Shubman Dubey, don't you? I don't think we're near that level in cricket at the moment. Also, the issue with the Indian side is if they are at all nervous about the very flammable tail that they have, they're not going to give up a wicket, are they? Like, I think that's the one thing people forget about retired outs is it actually does, it brings a fresh batter to the crease. So you might, that one wicket that you give might become two very, very quickly. But yeah, look, I could see why you could make the claim for Rinku coming in today, but I would have thought that it made sense for Shubman Dubey. They were going to keep bowling spin as long as possible, right?
And I mean, Erasmus bowls the third last over or something like that. So it does make sense to, you know, send him in that batting order point, because you want Shivam Dubey to face maximum overs of spin. But there is one caveat in this. You also want Akshar Patel to face maximum overs of spin, and he gets wasted at number 8.
Yeah, the bigger argument really is whether you need Shivam Dubey and Akshar Patel in the same side when they both basically want to bat in the same position. And they're different kinds. They give you different kinds of bowling. They kind of don't help each other in your batting order, I think. You know, that's one of, this is the team and they're not going to change the team, you know, the general makeup of it. But it's probably one of the things that's just, it's a slight overlap that doesn't quite work in the right way, right? And we see that with teams. At times. I mean, you could argue a similar thing with Hardik Pandya, right? And you don't really want Hardik Pandya to be your new ball bowler, right? You probably want Hardik Pandya to bowl one over in the power play and then to come on for the eighth over. But that doesn't make any sense in this side because of the way the spinners work, right? So again, sometimes you just end up with a slightly imperfect model. And I would say the same with Rinku.
Yeah, fair enough. And they'll have to figure out how to optimally utilize their resources. Anyway, Andy asks, do India look less than the sum of their parts? Don't get the point of Dubé if they deploy him after the spinners are done. Why not play Washi instead? Again, I don't think there was any issue with Dubé's deployment. And Washington only gets into the side if the opposition team is stacked with left-handed batters, in my opinion.
I mean, this is basically what I was just saying. They don't look less than the sum of their parts. It's just that it's very rare in international cricket everyone is going to completely help another player, right? So trying to think of a good example of this, of like England in one day cricket, right? Or even England in test cricket. It doesn't actually help them to have Will Jacks and Joe Root because then they have two guys who bowl the same thing. But at the same time, they are slightly different versions of that. And so it might come off, but you're not getting maximum Joe Root. And also, like, you know, Will Jacks is not quite, it's like, if we picked Will Jacks, we can't bowl Joe Root, right? We can't do it that way. And it's a bit like when Ashwin and Washi played early in his career. Right?
Yeah.
You get these little flaps, I suppose is the best way of putting them. And there's not much you can do about it. It's just the way that, you know, this is why franchise cricket is easier to kind of stagger these things better.
Also, you have to consider the fact that they've got three really elite spin bashers in that team for the middle overs, which are Dubé, Hardik and Akshar. Akshar is the least of the elite.
Yeah.
So you have to waste him, right? Like someone is going to get wasted.
Exactly. So to speak.
Yeah. Anyway, next super chat, please. Got corner taken quickly, Origi. He says, do you think Tilak has a tendency to Babar Azam in innings and break all momentum?
I love that.
How can sides potentially exploit his weakness or how can India counter this? He does at times struggle versus spin, but I often feel that Tilak Verma is a bit hard done by when people think of him as just an accumulator. On his day, he can be way more than that.
He's actually a really fascinating cricketer. We've got a video coming up soon, Cornet, which you might be fascinated in. He doesn't really fit the mold of a lot of modern players. And I think that he can be a bit of a dot ball merchant, right? But he can make up for it so quickly with so many fours in a row that you don't notice it in the way that perhaps you do with some other players. But he does actually dot up more than I think his strike rate would suggest. And then he sort of explodes with a bunch of boundaries. So, yeah, I was a bit shocked to find it. It's a long story, but there's a video that we have coming out, which basically tells you whether you are, we're basically looking at players based on their boundary percentage and their dot ball percentage contextually. And I was shocked at where he was. But then I thought about it. I was like, actually, I'm not. He does chew up more dot balls than other players. And so he's the sort of guy who can be 16 off 4 or 2 off 10, right? And I think we've seen that a lot with him. You take that because of the explosiveness on the other side.
Yeah. And I mean, once Abhishek is back into the playing 11, once he's done with his illness, we hope that he's well soon, he might not even need to go berserk all the time, right? Tilak can afford to play the accumulator role in a lineup where everyone smashes it.
See, I don't think he's a good accumulator. I think that's my argument is when he tries to accumulate, I think he just dots up, right? He's not a natural single taker in the way that Babar Azam is, right? Babar Azam doesn't dot up all that much. He singles up. He doesn't dot up a lot. And I think in Tilak's case, he's almost more like a West Indian batter in some ways.
Interesting.
In that he can get to that sort of, as I said, 3 off 9 sort of situation. You're like, wait, how has this happened? Right? Yeah. And then he hits 3 sixes and you've completely forgotten how he started, right? And we see this, there's a lot of West Indian players. He actually, in the graphic I looked at, he's in the West Indies. He's not far from the West Indies cluster of guys.
Wow. That's very fascinating. Keep a lookout for that piece and subsequent video, guys. What's the next super chat? We have Prashant, who asks, do we need Rinku because we can have Kuldeep Siraj in bowling? India like to form 8-3, or that's their formation, which is preferred. So they will never go 7-4. They want batting at number 8. So I don't think you'll get to see that.
They want to go really hard at the top. So they're always going to want that extra batting in there. So Prashant, they might do it for a one-off game if there's a reason to do it. But I'd be very shocked if we saw a lineup like that.
Yeah. All right. What's the next one? We've got Rohit Kumar Jha. Okay, we've skipped that one.
No, we don't.
Okay, we haven't. Prithvi once again asks, I think it's good that India's weaknesses have been exposed early. Teams who identify and problem solve tend to win the cup. P.S. Robbie was flaming Dubey's haircut on commentary. I missed that part. I did catch that bit though where Robbie said the word patch like 6 times in 5 seconds. And I even sent a message in the group that take a shot every time Robbie says patches or patchy.
Yeah, I don't know if I'd say India's weakness has been exposed. I just don't think... I would probably look at this from a different perspective, which is in tournament cricket, you kind of want to get into a rhythm, right? And at the moment, I think they came in wanting to hit a 6 from every ball, and they found that a little bit tougher than they were expecting. They probably, you know, we've seen this a lot in tournaments, and at the moment, they're kind of probing where they need to be. I wouldn't say that their weaknesses have been exposed even with the new ball. I just think that was a pitch where we saw with both teams, the new ball just didn't work for the seamers all that much, right? And came onto the bat. So, I wouldn't say that. But in general, you don't want to be playing your best cricket in the first two games of a World Cup, right? Yeah. Like, as you know, it is a problem-solving thing, and you kind of want to be working through your issues. You don't want to be...
Also, people already know this who study the game that India do have a weakness when it comes to their power play bowling, and they have a weak 9, 10, 11. This is not knowledge. People already would have known this who are planning for facing India.
Yeah, exactly. And it's not like it's one of those things when you have a weak 9, 10, 11, it's not like you can just say to your team, just go out and get a quick 8 wickets and we'll be fine, right? Like, and so even with India in the power play, there is always a possibility. I mean, I think they're in a really good position if Hardik and Ashdeep can bowl the first 3 overs. Because if it goes wrong, they can actually bring Bumrah on for the 4th over. And they also have Chakravarti who can bowl an over in the power play, right? Like, they actually have some flexibility there. But I think it's better for them in the short term to be trying not to bowl Bumrah and Chakravarti in the power play, right? And make sure that the other guys get as much experience as possible and work through their issues.
Yeah. All right. Do we have more? Let's just finish these before we move on to the next game. Bharat 1109 asks, open with Sanju and Abhi and Ishan at 3 and Kuldeep in place of Rinku. That is much better combination. Again, they won't go 7-4. They'll always go 8-3. And they might open with Sanju and Abhishek with Ishan at 3. I just said that in the start of the podcast.
Yeah.
Because they've got all these informed players that they want to use. They might as well try that in one of these games. Maybe the last group game because they can afford to.
Yeah, they might play around with it. I think we're unlikely to see them with the extra bowler, as we said before. It's not Gambier's jam.
Yeah. All right. Do we have any more? Let's go with Jack Jack. He says, hey, Bairam, I apologize for yesterday's comment. Did not mean to be disrespectful. I meant it in jest. Should have communicated it a bit better. Don't worry about anything, man. You don't have to apologize. Thank you for your money. Okay. And now we've got Rohit Kumar Jha, who has an opposite end of the spectrum question. Gurbaz and Shamar Joseph thrown out of the PSL. Surely Afghanistan and West Indies shouldn't travel to Pakistan anymore, citing security reasons, isn't it, Bairam? If you have followed my work, Rohit, anytime players are left out of any sort of league because of their nationality, I call it bigotry and I call it out equally. Go to the Pro Sports show today that we recorded earlier today. I have called the Gurbaz thing out.
I've missed all this. Why have they been thrown out?
So Pakistan and Afghanistan have political tensions. And originally when Gurbaz was signed up as a direct signing by Peshawar, I hailed it as, you know, really progressive because I was like, sport transcends boundaries and borders. Big win. And then, of course, you know, things kind of fell through and you expect that in this sort of current climate. But I still hate it. I'm not going to endorse that. Shamar Joseph there was a lot of backlash when Islamabad picked him because of his allegations, which I think is fair, by the way. I think him not playing completely makes sense. I'm in that bandwagon.
That's very fascinating, actually, that a team would do that as well. But yeah, these are completely different situations than with what happened with Mustafizur, where there was also a threat made on him by someone.
That's what he's inferring. And I mean, he's trying to be sly.
All these things are worth talking about. But if you're going to bring something like this up, Rohit, it needs to be apples with apples. That isn't apples with apples, is it? That is a different, those are two different situations. They're equally fascinating. And there should also be, you know, it's getting to the point where, as I said before, I can see fractures coming everywhere in cricket. The last week has made me feel a little bit better. But realistically, the people involved, I don't really trust them at all because they don't give a shit about cricket. Right. And people who don't give a shit about cricket don't make decisions for cricket.
I have similar feelings. And you can even compare the Fizz instance to Gurbaz. And I'm I have the same stance for both of those things. But the Shamar Joseph thing is very, very different. Anyway, I think that's done. All the Super Chats are done. Good job, Jared. And we still have two more games to review over here. There is one more Super Chat, I suppose. Alden Pinto says, now that Behram is a big fan of Erasmus, is he excited for Usman Tariq? We were born excited for Usman Tariq. Yeah. All right. Andy B says, what's led to Sky making runs in the last 2 months? I mean, he was always a quality player, right? He was the anomaly before Abhishek came around.
I mean, he was in bad form, then he got in good form. I mean, look, yeah. these things are not, these things are often not complicated. A lot of it is about confidence and how you feel when you get up in the morning, right? He could have had a, when he wasn't making runs, he could have had something in his leg that didn't make his bat swing go straight. Like, there could be a bunch of different things that did it, and he wouldn't even be able to pick it up. You know, we've been lucky enough recently to work with some players and point out some things that they didn't notice. Like, one particular bowler who reached out for help, who I'm pretty sure was running in off the wrong foot. So he used to start his run up off one foot and it switched it to the other foot. Not everyone notices these things, right? And, you know, you hear Robbie talk to, you know, I've heard Robbie talk to players who are having trouble with their techniques and just being, and he'll say, oh, you're doing this and you used to do this. Not everyone notices.
Yeah. All right. B-R-R-R-R-R-T-T-T-T says, Dubey was so bored he bowled no balls to challenge himself. Also, do you
think he is an 84 threat, according to the ICC.
Yep, or crick wins, whatever, however they come up with that metric. Also, do you think T20 World Cup, we have more kick if it's played like the new Champions League format? I think this format is brilliant. I would include more teams, have these five groups or four groups of five teams, and then go to the Super 8 stage. I have zero issues with that. I actually love this format. Okay, that's one. That one's done. Prashant once again asks, only Asia Cup final innings of Tilak is saving them. No, that's not the only thing that's saving him. He's done well.
He's a fantastic cricketer, guys. Like,
yeah.
A couple of weeks ago, it was Sanju Samson should never play again. There were people questioning Sky. You've got, people are allowed to have form fluctuations. This is just normal cricket, guys. And the problem is that if the Indian team was run the way that the fans currently want it, it would be one of the worst teams in the world. And I can tell you that because I have evidence of that right here, because Behram will tell you what it's like when you make decisions like fans with your cricket team. You end up with a cricket team where no players have any confidence. They have no idea if they're playing the next game. They don't know what their role definition is. They don't understand what they've done wrong. Absolutely the worst case scenario. You should not be doing that. Tilak Varma is a fantastic player. He makes sense in that position. As I said before, he plays in a bit of a weird way, and sometimes he's going to dot up and sometimes he's going to go absolutely ballistic. That is what they are looking for from him.
And he just came back from surgery. Anyway, enough on the India game. We've got two more games to discuss. But before that, we will be taking a short break. You guys are watching Combox Live with Jared and Behram. And go nowhere, because we will be back very, very shortly.
Cricket boards actually make watching their games almost impossible now. I spend almost as much time trying to find where I can view it as I do actually following the action. That is why I use NordVPN. They let me find all the cricket I want to watch while protecting me from the nasty side of the internet. Nord will free your cricket matches. Grab your exclusive NordVPN deal by going to nordvpn.com/goodareas to get a huge discount off your NordVPN plan plus 4 additional months on top. It's completely risk-free with Nord's 30-day money-back guarantee. Watch every match with NordVPN.
Welcome back to Combox Live. You guys are with Jared and Behram, and it's time to talk about the Italy-Nepal game. I've been waiting to talk about this game because Italy absolutely obliterated Nepal, winning the game by 10 wickets and 44 balls to spare. And this was their first ever win at the T20 World Cup. The Mosca brothers, or the Super Mosca bros, the two Mosqueteers. Can you come up with more ones? Different ones?
Well, it is kind of funny. Like, I don't know if this show was ever big in Pakistan or in Canada when you were in any of these countries. But have you ever watched Happy Days?
I have not.
So Happy Days is like one of the most successful TV shows of all time. It also has like 6 spin-offs that were also huge, right? And the Menanti brothers and the Mosca brothers just sound like lost characters from Happy Days. And that, all I can think about is that I'm watching like 1970s sitcom characters the whole time when I'm watching it. Look, it was great for them. We've talked about this before, but I remember commentating with Jade Dernbach, and he was saying to me, what do you know about Italy cricket? And I was like, I know a couple of guys who are like have Italian heritage, and I know they've played for the team a little bit, but I don't know much more than that. And he's like, because they're asking me to be involved. And he said, and they're getting everyone. And it's a fascinating new way of doing it. We've seen Ireland do it. We've seen some of the other countries do it as well, where they're like, we have players around the world that are qualified for our country. As long as we keep an ear to the ground, we can find them. And then we can build a cricket culture off the back of that, because that's what Australia and South Africa did. The original Australian team had a bunch of people born in England in it, which everyone seems to have forgotten. But anyway, and it's a great way of doing it, of importing cricket cultures from around the world. It also brings in a melting pot. And then on top of that, Italy has a cricket history. So to see them do what they've done, I thought they would really struggle in this tournament. I don't think they're anywhere near as good a team as Nepal. I'm about to absolutely put the boot into Nepal in a minute. But I thought Italy played really smart cricket. Again, they understood what the wicket was doing. They played well. They kept the pressure on. And Nepal just kept stepping on their own dicks, really, all the way through the game. I mean, four of Nepal's top five scored in double figures, didn't they?
Something like that. But I mean, my memory of that game will always be the Mosca brothers. Or I mean, it was an absolute Moskaker. I'm going to continue to come up with these. My favorite ones is the two Mosketeers. But anyway, I mean, these guys just literally pulverized all of Nepal's bowlers. They didn't even spare Sandeep Lamichhane. After four overs, they were 50 for none. Their power play score was 68 for none. They had completely, you know, won this game first in the first innings, and then they gave Nepal no shot. And I mean, they made the slog sweep hip again, Jared. Have you checked out those slog sweeps?
Yeah, no, they were, you know, they were spamming. It was like watching England play cricket, where they just keep playing the same shot over and over again.
Yeah.
And just to say that I think when the wicket was spinning, like Ben Menenti, I've looked this up. He has never bowled better than this in his life. He's only ever been more economical than this once in his life. I don't think he's ever taken more than two wickets ever. Like, he's a part-time bowler. Like, you know, we're talking about Erasmus. Erasmus is a full-time non-traditional spinner. Menenti is what he is, right? Like, you know, he's a guy who can make it work occasionally. To end up with 2 for 9, and then you think to yourself, okay, Nepal played spin pretty well in this tournament. Like, didn't Nepal take down Adil Rashid in the previous game? Right? So you're thinking to yourself, well, what are they going to do? What are their spinners going to do to Italy, who aren't as good as playing spin in what I've seen of their team? And it went the other way. As you said, they just absolutely mullered them from beginning to end. It was brilliant cricket from Italy, because I think if you've ever watched Nepal play, you know that once they sort of get a sniff, they can make really low totals be very competitive, because they all come in. There, as you said, there was no sniff. They went after the fast bowlers, they went after the spinners, and then they slog swept everything that they wanted consistently. And well done to Italy, because, you know, winning your first game is great at a World Cup, but winning it like that, that's a hell of a win.
Yeah, that is something. 10 wickets, 44 balls to spare. But, you know, this is a team that lost Joe Burns because of politics. Emilio Gay is not in this T20 World Cup squad. He helped them qualify. And Wayne Madsen is out injured. Harry Menenti was the captain today, and he opted to field first, which was the right call. But just a bit on Bo Menenti. Oh, sorry, not Bo Menenti, although that should be his name. He looks like a Bo. Ben Menenti is my spirit animal. That is who I want to be when I grow up, right? And I don't know much about him, but he bowls the first over of the game, concedes one run, ends up for 2 for 9, and he's just got this sort of stature that just enamors me. I look up to the guy.
He's so... I don't think... He's so Australian club cricketer, Ben Menenti. And I say that with all due respect, because obviously he is a professional cricketer and has done very well, but he's just got Australian club cricket vibes of... Yeah, I'll bowl. It reminds me of, like, he's like a slightly better bowler than Aaron Finch. Right. And occasionally Aaron Finch would just bowl it over out of nowhere, and you'd be like, what? Wait. And then you'd be like, but Aaron Finch is kind of like the club cricketer, the S tier version of the club cricketer. Right. And Ben Menenti is like, you know, a couple of rungs down on that. Look, I love the way that they thought about things. They seem to really have good, clear plans. But as I said, I mean, Nepal have made 123.
Yeah.
They had a 20, a 23, a 17, and a 27. I'm sorry, you should not be bowled out for 123 if four of your top five make it to double figures and get set. Like, that, there is a genuine issue there. And I know those guys. They can bat a lot better than they did. So well played to Italy for understanding that it was a little bit tricky on that surface. And then probably that's why they went so hard at the top as well, right? They were trying to put all that pressure back on Nepal, and everything Italy tried worked, and nothing Nepal tried worked.
And it was slightly tricky, but then again, Italy showed us how to bat on this surface. So, I mean, Nepal will be very, very disappointed with this game, because they almost beat England and now they've absolutely gotten massacred by Italy. I'm not going to stop, guys. Where the hell or how the hell is John Smuts in this team? And my memory of John Smuts was, okay, he's a batter, plays for South Africa. Over here, he's bowled two power play overs, none for 12, ends with one for 22. He was a bowler in this game. None of this stuff makes sense to me.
He's always been a bit of an all-rounder, but I think he's somewhere between a fifth and a sixth bowler, perhaps, traditionally. I reckon I called his last game for South Africa, which would have been, 2018? I was in South Africa doing radio commentary. And I remember him playing because he was someone I was always obsessed with. Look, on the right surface, JJ Smuts is a pretty handy bowler. Again, though, he's only ended up with one for here, but did he go, 4.5 and over? Was it something like that?
Yeah. And he bowled two power play overs for none for 12, right? Yeah.
They've got three spinners. Manenti's not a frontline bowler. JJ's probably a 5th/6th bowler. And then they've got a 35-year-old Sri Lankan bowler who has not played a lot of, at least the other two have played some top level cricket. These are not the three bowlers that should be dominating Nepal when the game before they were coming down the wicket and smashing Adil Rashid. Well done to Nepal, Italy, for working out the right way to bowl on this wicket and keeping pressure on and also bowling the right deliveries. It's all well and good to be the wicket's in your favor. You still need to bowl the right deliveries and everything else. Well done to them. But if I'm Nepal, I'm just looking at this going, we should have beaten England and losing to Italy would have been poor. They didn't lose to Italy. Yeah. They got absolutely shanked.
Yeah, I mean, for them to get bowled out for 123 in 19.3 overs was just plain bad. And the Sri Lankan that you speak of, the 35-year-old, he speaks fluent Italian. He's an Inter Milan fan. He took 3 for 18 and his wrong-uns were really hard to pick. So I like it's all the, of the arcs.
It's the best I've seen him bowl. I've seen him bowl in about, I've forgotten his name now. Is that Carl?
Krishan Kalugamagi.
That's right. That's him. Sorry, I couldn't remember his name before. I also forgot Grant Stewart. I forgot that I had extra bowlers. But
that guy's a pretty dude.
But I've seen him bowl a couple of times. This is the best I've seen him bowl. I was really impressed. But again, you're not looking at top level spin. And that's a real concern for Nepal that they've been done by that. But on the batting side with Italy, I'm giving them all the credit there. As you said, they went after Lamachani. They went after everyone. It was a really, really impressive win. It's hard to look at that Italy game and go, this is a team that didn't deserve to smash Nepal in the face. They absolutely did, right? It's up to Nepal now to be like, how do we end up here?
Yeah, I mean, they out-batted Nepal. They out-bowled Nepal. And they were so brilliant in the field. They had a perfect really fielding game. Really, really good in the field. And, you know, I just want Italy to get more and more exposure. I said this in yesterday's show as well, that you need to start making the bilateral T20 series, trilateral T20 series. Make it a tri-series. Give these teams
that
more exposure. Because it's happened a bit, right? Pakistan had the UAE in that series versus Afghanistan. Yeah. Hopefully, we see more and more of that. Because without that exposure, they're hard done by. Will they ever get better?
I think we're less likely to see bilateral series in the future. So trilateral series. Well, you might see some quadrangular series that occasionally happen coming up to big tournaments. Like if I was playing a big tournament, right, and I don't know, I'm playing in New Zealand, playing a quadrangular tournament in England, if I'm England, against a bunch of different teams with different skills, I think would be really good. But I think the trilateral series are dead, man. They didn't make any money. That's the issue.
Yeah. Also, I mean, this could help them get some gigs. Krishan Kalugamage could perhaps land a gig in the ILT20. He was player of the match today. And the Mosca brothers, I know that Justin Mosca, the left-hander, his 50 wasn't that good, right? He scored his 50 of 37 balls and it was an unbeaten 60 of 44. But the way Anthony Mosca absolutely smashed it, he very well could pick up a fan.
Well, that's the other thing. These sorts of guys, and we're seeing the same around. I think the Nepalese players are quite well-known because people play franchise cricket there. But some of these other franchises, their teams aren't as well-known. So you have the chance of, changing your future, right, with a couple of these. I think the Mosca brothers, I don't even think they're like New South Wales fringe players, are they? Or Big Bash fringe players? I think they're a level below that. But remember that being really good in New South Wales is like being really good in, in Mumbai or in Barbados, right? Like you're probably really, really good. You just can't force your way into the side because there's so much talent around. And so, the ability to be able to do that. And as you said, someone who can bowl wrist spin and spin the ball in both directions is a good backup. There aren't that many guys out there who can land the ball and spin it in both ways at genuine pace, right?
Yeah. Tony Mosca, for me, is really, I was really impressed. He was a passionate guy kissing the badge. The bald head works as well.
Who
I
was
think
the one who did
character.
The baby thing at the end? That was his brother, wasn't it? Who did
that
the
was his brother. No, yeah, I'm a bigger fan of Tony Mosca. I feel like his 28
of the Moscas,
he ends up with what?
Of the Moskers, Bayram is more Tony.
He ends up with 62, unbeaten 62 of 32. That's nearly a strike rate of 200, man. That's got to have caught some eyes. Come on, someone sign Tony Mosca. What an Italian name as well, right? I'm Tony Mosca. Anyway, I think we've discussed this game enough. Time to take another ad break. You guys are watching Jared and Bayram on Combox Live, so go nowhere. We'll be back very, very shortly.
Brian Lara used pot plants to work on his placement. John Wright glued his glove to his bat. Sachin Tendulkar dug up practice pitches. Tatenda Taibu cut the top off his bat. Claire Taylor used a hockey grip. Steve Smith was from tennis. Dean Jones would call phantom runs. And Victor Trumper turned the Nets into a war zone to survive. The best batters in the world do whatever they have to make runs. We have told their stories in our new book, The Art of Batting.
Welcome back to Combox Live. You guys are with Jared and Bayram, and we've got one more game left to review for the day. It was the worst game of the day. Sri Lanka obliterated Oman by 105 runs. And I mean, Oman have just been a no-show in this T20 World Cup. Not all due to their own fault. A lot of their players aren't playing this World Cup because of their own pay disputes and stuff. But I mean, Sri Lanka were okay. Yes, Dasun Shanaka has scored the fastest 50 of this T20 World Cup of 19 balls. And he's also bagged a franchise gig in the PSL today. I'm not sure if you heard. He's bowled like 3 overs in this World Cup and gone for like 6 runs in each of those overs, right? So it's weird, really.
I mean, him hitting a bunch of runs against a associate team is a lot less surprising to me than him actually not getting smashed by the same associate teams, because he's basically an associate medium baser, right? Maybe slightly quicker, but there's not a lot going on there. Ratnaike, of course, is someone who's really fascinating. I commentated on his series against England, so he's someone that I have seen of recent times. He seems to have a lot of skill. What's really fascinating about him is how bad he has been domestically in T20 cricket. He's never made a run. I think he averages like 15 or something.
Interesting. So I saw a bit of Pawan Ratnaike in Pakistan. I felt like they were playing him too low. He was batting at like 6. Now he's batting at number 4. He's come into the side ahead of Kushal Janath Pereira. That's where he's kind of slotted in.
I think you're right. I think he might have even batted. I'm trying to remember now, but I think I saw him bat down the order in one game as well. And then they threw him up, and that's when he made the 100. Was that in the ODI? But you're right.
This is England, right?
Yeah. And because I remember looking at it, he's batting at number 6 or number 7 in the one day team. And, you know, I'd done a little bit of research on him, and I was like, maybe I've gotten confused, because Ratnaike is a really common name, right, in Sri Lanka. So I was like, maybe I've gotten confused with someone else, because I'm pretty sure this guy averages 50 with the bat in first class cricket, right? And he does average 50 with the bat in first class cricket. He also averages 45 in List A cricket. So he's been firing in those two, but I do have the stats here. I was really close. Well, I said he averaged 15. He averages 14.84 at a strike rate of 113 in 39 T20 games. Bayram.
That is a lot of T20 games.
So he averages 50, 45, and then 15. It makes no sense at all.
Lower that average, because when you couple it with that strike rate of what, 113 is it? That is really, really bad. But, you know, he was brilliant today. 24 ball, 50, unbeaten, 60 of 28, and the player of the match. Although Shanaka gets 50 of 20, so maybe he deserved that. But I guess that's just finish overs slogging, right?
I was going to say, I think Ratnaike did the more of the damage, don't you, of the two. I thought he was the... I thought he was the one that really set the game away. I mean, look, Oman were just
non-existent, right? However, I will say this.
But they were early wickets.
Kusal Mendes has got to be the most fortunate player in this T20 World Cup thus far. He was dropped again, Jared. He got dropped like 4 times versus Ireland. Today he was dropped on 21. He scored these slow-ass 50s, right? Today he gets there of 39 balls. And then he scores 61 of 45. The worst 50 of the day, barring the other Oman guy, the Nadeem bloke, right? he scores an unbeaten 53 of 56.
Mendes, I think he's really interesting, because he's in horrible form at the moment.
Yeah, right? He looks not good out there.
The longer he bats, the worse form he looks like he's in. And as you said, he's been dropped a bunch of times, but I thought he looked fine against England. I'd have to go back and have a look at his form, actually. But I don't remember seeing him against England thinking, oh, this guy's struggling or anything. But suddenly, he just looks like he can't hit the ball off the square. And it's fascinating to see this happen. He's such a brilliant player of spin. And this has been a tournament dominated by spin bowling so far. Yeah. And yet, he's not looked at all. And these are his recent scores, right? 61, 56, 26, 32, and 37. So when I say he's in bad form, I don't mean he's going out. I just mean he looks scratchy and uncomfortable and unable to hit boundaries. It's really odd watching him bat at the moment.
Yeah, I mean, it got painful today. Honestly, I watch the first game every day from my bed, right? Because it's a little early in the morning. And today I switch it on. It's toss time. And I'm like, oh, fuck. Oman have won the toss, which means that Sri Lanka are obviously batting first because they won't be brave enough to bat first. And then Sri Lanka go on to smash the highest total of this T20 World Cup thus far, 225 for 5. So, I mean, sure, Kusal Mendes might be weird currently, but there were some other batting performances. Although, there is one big issue with Sri Lanka. Mm-hmm. Hasaranga's replacement, Dushan Himanta, got taken apart by Oman. And Oman did barely score any runs. So, this could be a worry for them because, you know, Hasaranga is irreplaceable and Janeth Lianage is also not a spinner, so he can't fit in that position.
Yeah, because we called the injury early, didn't we? I went straight on air and said, he's not playing again. He's done, right? Yeah. And they then said, by the way, they said it's a tear. I don't think he's playing if it was a tear, Hasaranga. Have you ever seen anyone tear their hamstring? They're in agony.
I've seen it live. I was sprinting with my friend and I'm towards the end and I'm looking back. I was like, where'd that guy go? And then I walked back and he was clutching his hamstring and that entire area went blue, Jared.
Yeah, yeah.
Blue.
And you can barely walk, right? And he was walking. Anyway, I'm just putting that out there. That seemed very odd to me that they said it was a tear. And tears of your hamstring are the worst. Anyway, we thought that they would bring in Van der Sar, right?
Yeah,
we
but then about that it. Means they have to go 7-4 and not 8-3.
Which we talked about it being interesting. So instead, but Van der Sar was playing against England recently, right?
Yeah, so, and doing well.
So if they thought he wasn't going to play in the World Cup, shouldn't they have been bowling Himanta then against England, right? Yeah. Like it doesn't make a lot of sense because Hasaranga was injured in that series against England as well. So they had an opportunity to play someone else in that series. They haven't done it. Now they've brought this bloke in cold. He's an all-rounder, right? Like he's not a frontline bowler. He's not a bowler. But you have a look at his record. He's got a really good T20 record so far, but he hasn't played a lot of international cricket. But he's an all-rounder. He's not an absolute specialist. And I thought at times today he looked like an all-rounder rather than a specialist. Also, if you're a leggy and you're not match fit, it's hard to just come in and bowl straight away, right?
Also, I mean, maybe they could bring in Charith Asalanka. I know he's not a power hitter, but then he can share some overs with Kaminu Mendes, who does all right today, 1-for-10 in 2 overs. That could be another ploy because I do understand why Sri Lanka want to elongate their batting lineup, right? Because once that top 4 or top 3 goes, there's not a lot of quality.
Look, honestly, I just don't think you can have Asalanka and Kusal Mendes in this form in the same team together.
True.
I just, if Kusal Mendes was in, you know, when he goes through, occasionally he just has those spurts where he hits everything for 4, right? If he had one of those spurts, I think Asalanka, I mean, there was times against Ireland where I was like, ooh, it'd be a shame that if they had Asalanka here, this game's over. And they don't. So I get the desperation to have him in the side, but you just can't have two guys who are going to knock it around 125 strike rate in your middle order, I don't think, at this stage. Did you want to talk about Mohammad Nadeem at all?
Mohammad Nadeem scores the slowest 50 of the T20 World Cup. What was it? 52, 53 balls? He goes with the red inker. 53 of 56 unbeaten. And I just love it because he knew the game was lost. He was like, I'm going to score my 50 over here.
I can promise you this. I've been watching Mohammad Nadeem for years. What you were seeing was him, not him batting the way the game was lost. That's how he bats. I've got his career numbers here. He's got in T20 internationals, he's got a strike rate of 103.
Uh-huh.
And in T20s, so he's played about another 10 separate to that, it goes down to 102. So he's actually slower. He's 43 years old.
Beautiful.
43 years old.
I mean, there's a story. He's probably going to go home to kids who are like in their late teens.
I mean, he debuted for Oman when he was in his 30s. And he's like, he's not a bad player. If you watch him in one day cricket, he's fine. But he really struggles in T20 cricket. He just has. It's like his bat is made of celery. Right. And not like fresh celery, but like, you know, the celery that gets caught in the bottom of the fridge a little bit too long. And you're like, oh, I can't eat this anymore. It's gone a bit floppy. He hits the ball like he's got wet, floppy celery in his head.
Anyway, I have Jeffrey Van Der Sey's performance versus England up in front of me. 2 for 39, 2 for 45, and 1 for 76 in 3 ODIs. So I suppose they don't really play him in T20s. And also, if they want to play him and not compromise...
Hasaranga got fit, though, after that as well. So, and Asalanka was playing, right?
Mm.
So, you know, maybe they played Asalanka as more of a bowler. I'm just saying,
they could bring
Van Der Sey bowled really well. His figures do not flatter him. I thought he bowled brilliantly in that series. The last game, they got to him a bit.
Yeah, I think Liyanagi is another option, but he bowls pace up. He's just another Shanaka, right? But he is quite explosive on his day. The bowling department still did pretty well. I mean, it's Oman, so we take that with an ounce of salt. But Teekshana's their most
informed
bowler. They did
well against the 43-year-old who has a strike rate of 103, did they?
Teekshana has had two good games in a row, right? Today also, two power play overs, 1 for 6, ends with 2 for 11 and 4 overs. I think Willalagay is good versus the weaker sides. He flatters himself with 1 for 17. But when it comes to tougher opposition teams, we might see Willalagay taken for plenty, right?
Oh, no. I think Willalagay is fine when the pitch spins or holds, right? Hmm. I don't think he's ever going to be a great flat pitch spinner because he has that low arm action and he doesn't put like a Jadeja-like level of rotations on the ball, right? But then he's clever. And once you give him a pitch that is doing anything, if he's your third spinner, which obviously now he's not, but fully fit. If he's your third spinner and the wicket is turning, he's really good and he gives you enough of the bat and in the field. The issue with him is if he's your second spinner, you really need the pitch to be in his favour and he's not always going to get that.
I think that's fair. And another last positive is that ever since Pathi Rana has remodeled his action, we haven't seen him do well. And I think this game was the first good game for him. None for 11 and 3 overs, although he didn't really matter much in the grand scheme of things. It was just Sri Lanka's spinners who were like dominating Oman.
To be honest, I think, I can't remember if it was one of the warm-up games I saw him as well. I can't remember if I saw him play against England, but certainly, who did they play? Ireland. I thought he looked at full capability. It must have been one of the games against England, then against Ireland. I've really liked Pathi Rana so far. He just hasn't got the rewards for how well he's running through the crease. He looks so much better than he did a year ago when I was like, who is this guy? This is Pathi Rana's gone. So I'm very hopeful of Pathi Rana.
Yeah. Also, I've got the fix thanks to this comment for Sri Lanka. You'll be happy with this. DDS! Bring DDS into the team!
I mean, obviously.
He's stopping sixes, right? I've seen that a couple of times now.
He's worth it for his fielding. He's worth it for his elegance and his grace and his fielding. Look, I don't know. Again, I don't know how you fit DDS or Asalanka in the side as it is at the moment, just because of the way that the Kusal's playing. DDS, by the way, I think the issue with him is he's one of those guys that if you made him open the batting, he'd probably average 28 to 30 at a strike rate of 140 doing that and get out not long after quite a bit and maybe occasionally hit the spinners. But he's really good in the power play, but he's absolutely useless to you if he doesn't play in the power play. And he's a very, very bits and pieces spinner.
Yeah, well, KJP is also around still.
Who?
Maybe they can fit KJP in, Kusal Janath Pereira. But then... Then Kamindu Mendis will have to bowl a lot more and the fifth bowler issue will remain. Anyway, that's enough on Sri Lanka as well. Let's take these super chats and go sleep, Jared. Or you will probably sleep. I'll stay up for a long time.
I'm going to go eat, but yeah, sure.
Yeah. Okay. What do we have? Show us.
Do you want me to show you?
Super chats? I'll probably go.
No, because before they just came up, I didn't put them up. So I thought someone was there.
I think Vignesh was doing them. Saurabh Kumar Patna, I think we've missed this super chat. So if you have a question, ask it. Thank you for the money. We've got Prasant Tomar who says, how do you people feel when we India take hostage in chat while India match and not interested in other matches? Because as neutral, anyone can get annoyed. I don't even pay any attention to it.
I mean, I think I've been working in cricket media for like 18 years, 19 years now, right? And it's like there are a lot of Indians and they're really interested in their team. And they're quite often really interested in other teams.
Yeah,
absolutely no issue.
You get all kinds of fans from India.
I think the bigger issue is when it's questions about Virat and he's not playing in a tournament or something, right? Like, I think it's those sorts of things. But if you're asking about the current Indian side during a World Cup, that's absolutely fine, right? Like, we're going to sometimes we get questions about England or Australia or New Zealand as well. Like, you know, that's how fans work. That's absolutely without any issue.
Yeah, anyway. Next one is from Hertz Manager, who says, just filling in for Jessica Kota. Much respect to Jessica the Transmetal Alchemist, one of our favorite patrons.
Not going to be her time zone, is it?
Yeah, unfortunately. Jack is back with another super chat. He asks, or she asks, I have no idea, or they ask. Tell us your gender. Are South Africa winning more close games now than earlier? South Africa, I think, have had their scare now. They are a much better side than this. You'll see them dominating some games, I believe. I actually have them above Australia if those two teams make it to the Super 8 round with India, because Australia have had all these injuries.
With Australia's injuries, I think that's fair. I'm not that high on South Africa.
Interesting.
Yeah.
I feel like they've got a very explosive batting lineup. Like, it works. They can outbat teams.
I don't know. You don't. I feel uncomfortable. I don't think they have the kind of anchor players that you need with a five-man bowling attack. I don't know if you want an explosive batting lineup with a five-man bowling attack. I think you want anchory type of batters in that. But look, then they've certainly got a chance. And as Bayram said, with Australia's injuries, there's no doubt that you'd have them. I mean, yeah. I haven't done the power list yet, but I will be doing it soon. And I would have them above Australia at the moment.
Is Oman number 20 in your future power list?
Oman are number 20. They were number 20 before today. They might be number 21 today.
Okay. All right. Next up, we've got Prithvi. Thank you for all the super chats, buddy. He asks, should Associate Nations be added to A tours of India, England, Australia? Also, is Minnow considered to be derogatory? Sunny G called them emerging nations today. I picked up on that. I was like, Sunny G, what do emerging nations entail? Is it the newer full member nations as well? But I mean, I don't think the A tours will help them as much as T20 games versus full member nations. I think that's where the magic is at.
No, I don't think it really matters. I just think they need more cricket against professionals to understand what professionals do, really. Look, associate cricket has got so good, and we have to respect the people. People like Richard Doan and Bob Woolmer and all those people who've been working with associate teams over the years have just done an incredible job to get us where we are. They need more cricket against professional cricketers consistently. I don't care if it's A tours or if it's in, you know, wherever it may be, as much professional cricket as they can get. And then they have to come up with a system that works for them. But yeah minnow is considered derogatory and they hate being called minnows.
No one likes being called a minnow, man. Let's just get rid of all the words which offend people.
That eats at your feet or something, is it? What do minnows actually do? No, they're tiny fish, aren't they?
I spent 11 years in formative years in Canada. I am trained not to offend people. So why can't everyone else kind of try to
I was just
going
to say, like, because you do remind me of a minnow. If a minnow is a tiny fish, I don't even know. Maybe I've got it wrong, but I think it's a tiny fish.
I don't mind being a tiny fish. Shiva asks, India is scratchy against spin for Pakistan. If openers fail, will they crumble? I think we are in for a thriller on Sunday. Another match like South Africa, Afghanistan. Pakistan will need power play wickets versus India, and then they could potentially catch them with their spinners because Abrar and Usman Tariq are doing well. But then India-Pakistan is often a game of nerves as much as it is a game of skill. And India are the better skilled team. Can they, you know, be out-nerved by Pakistan? Pakistan are, you know, panicky. They are the team which panics all the time. So I feel like I've got India as favourites. But if these teams play each other, both these teams play each other seven times, maybe Pakistan win one of those times?
Ooh, one out of seven. So what does that give them? About a 15% chance, is it?
I think that's what I would give them, Jared. Maybe less than that. I mean, even on a surface which helps Pakistan. We've seen this in the Asia Cup. I'd still back India to win that game.
Yeah, I just think there's so much that needs to go right for Pakistan to win a game like that. I'd be shocked if Pakistan won. You know, the problem with the spinning thing is, if it's a wicket that helps spin, are we suddenly thinking that India doesn't have world-class spinners? Like, if you were to pick, which team would you pick for their spin attack?
Of course, India. Varun and Kuldeep could eat Pakistan alive. And Pakistan aren't a really good team playing spin themselves, right? They struggle.
That's why Baba's here, right? Because they wanted that insurance. So, yeah, that's the issue. I heard Saqlain Mushtaq say his comments, and we don't want to make, you know, we don't want to bring up former players saying silly things all that often on this channel. But he did say, you know, they will rig the pitch for India. And I was thinking to myself, what's a pitch that would not be rigged for India? If it spins, if it seams, if it's batting friendly? Like, what's the fourth option, Saqlain? Have you come up with a particular pitch that I haven't thought of yet? They're a better side. They're more balanced all the way through. Like, good luck.
If it is a turner and there's no ICC event in which some former Pakistan player doesn't make that sort of comment, we've gotten used to it anyway. But if it is the sort of pitch where the pitch slows down and there's no dew, then batting first is an obvious advantage. And if Pakistan can make the most of India's weak power play bowling, and you know, they might give themselves a shot.
Yeah.
Shaheen's in terrible form.
Yeah. I just think too many things have to go right for Pakistan win that game. But look, it's T20 cricket. Dew drop catches one innings. All these things can change things. Was it Ireland one year where Curtis Camphor, who's not even a good bowler, took like four wickets in five balls or something and won a game. Like, random things happen in T20 cricket. So, of course, Pakistan have a chance. But if you're looking at it on paper, so much has to go right for Pakistan to be a legitimate chance in that game.
The only thing that's really going in Pakistan's favor is that it's a volatile format. And it's Pakistan, right? They could do anything. You never rule them out of any sort of game. Last super chat of the day, hopefully. Prashant Tomar, thank you for all of your money today, buddy. Extra question. How do you see the future of ODIs, especially in India? Because most of us are there because of Roko, and especially Kohli, because we can't watch ODI tests in T20s. Great. These are two separate things. I feel like ODIs are dying anyway, but Rohit and Kohli, because they're only playing that format, they're bringing a lot of eyeballs to India's ODI cricket. So I don't know how to answer this.
2023, there were genuine questions of whether ODI cricket should be shut down. And that is not like fans, that is people around boardrooms talking about it. It's had a bit of a resurgence since, partly because that tournament was successful, but just partly it's working well at the moment and, you know, people are watching it, right? And it doesn't have a long future as it currently stands. But I think that from my understandings, bilateral T20 tournaments are less likely to be played in the future and ODIs are more likely to be played in the short-term future. And if that's the case, that gives them a stay of execution. But there's no reason for... they're actually like a really successful sport. The problem is that they're being compared to Test cricket and T20 cricket, which are far more successful at the moment. But if ODI cricket just existed on its own, it would be a more than successful enough sport to continue. But that's not how cricket is run. And that's part of the issue that we have.
If Varun starts running cricket, then say goodbye to ODIs. And I really enjoy the format as a fan. When I'm covering ODI cricket, man, I hate my life. I'm not going to lie. Because ODIs can often be so one-sided and you're just watching and you know what the result is going to be and you want to kill yourself.
When you're commentating, if any of you ever become a cricket commentator, it is the absolute worst to commentate a one-day game. Unless they're incredible, they just go on and it's not ideal.
Anyway, I want to end this show with this golden comment by Hypocaust, friend of the podcast. He says, after all the drama getting there, the funniest outcome for India versus Pakistan would be if the forecast causes a washout.
Is there rain, June?
There is some rain due, but 40% light rain. Honestly, give it to me. We're going to lose money, all of us, everyone who creates content on cricket. But if that means that there's going to be no more drama, I'll take it.
Oh my God, could you imagine? Because I don't know how it works for ICC tournaments, but I know in England, you get rain insurance, right? Hmm. So teams actually claim back when major games are rained out. I've never heard of that for the ICC. I'm assuming it exists, but yeah, I'm not aware of it.
Insurance people are absolutely screwed if they have bought that insurance.
Imagine having to pay out that game of all games. Because I remember being in Kolkata when Pakistan were playing there. And we thought that game was going to get washed out. We were told by the ICC, if it rains for like another 5 minutes, it's so damp out there, when they're not going to be able to play. And I was like, how much is that worth? And someone from the ICC said, we don't ask questions like that until we have to.
So based on what I've been told, that game is worth at the very least about $250,000 US. So if the biggest payday in cricket is washed out, quarter of a million. $250,000. That doesn't make sense.
$250K is Italy versus Namibia, mate.
Okay, so then it's $250 million. It's $250 million then.
It's a hard one to get an exact number on, but yes, it's a lot. Right, a normal Indian game is worth at a World Cup is probably worth 50 to 60. So if it's 3 to 4 times that, you're getting up towards $250 million. $250 million. I was like, we could afford that game. We'll chip in around the water cooler.
Yeah, anyway, that is cricket's or international cricket's biggest payday. So let's see how the rain behaves, because there's been a lot of drama in the build-up. Let's see how it unfolds. Anyway, that's it for today's show. Thank you so much for all of your interactions, all of your super chats, some really smart super chats in there today as well. It's a fun T20 World Cup thus far. We'll catch you once again tomorrow. So you guys take care of yourselves. Have a good one. Follow Combox everywhere. Like, share, subscribe, all of that fun stuff. And we'll see you once again tomorrow. But we've got a super chat, which we have to take. Extra long outro has cost us. Vibhor Seth, I know you have been asked this regularly. What's a realistic solution to bridge the gap between lower sides and higher sides? Regular B-side game? Jared, take it.
What lower side? I mean, the associate teams have never been better. So we are bridging the gap. I think it's very hard for the top teams. They just have so much natural advantages over the teams in that sort of tier below. A games aren't going to be able to do it. But you can have a good run with A games and success the way that New Zealand did and build a side. But essentially, the teams who are not in the top three or four best sides have to be more creative, and they're not.
I have the tri-series idea, obviously, but Jared doesn't like it. Shiva over here has the last Super Chat, hopefully, of the day. If India wins the 2027 ODI World Cup, it will be alive. They have.
I don't
won
think that saves it.
The
I don't think
that ODI
saves
World
it.
Cup. Yeah.
Don't think so, that saves anyway it at all.
All right.
Thank you for listening to this podcast on the Combox Network. There is an ad-free version of this you can find by supporting us on Patreon at Good Areas Podcast. You can also access our Discord channel there. Please like, subscribe, and rate this show. Every one of these helps us. If there was a guest on a show, you can find their links in the show notes. Huge thanks to Ruckshit, Ishit, and everyone else who helps us get our content out there. If you want to know more about us, head to combox.tv.
If you make a lot of content like me, oh, you are going to need help. And that is why we use Minvo.pro, a slicing and dicing tool that uses AI to conjure up incredible clips from your podcasts and meetings. If you make content, go to Minvo.pro to cut it.